Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Welcome to the First Cut Podcast. I'm Rick Gaiman, and this is your DFS preview for this week's Bermuda Championship. And joining me to break it all down, as he does every single Monday, it's Greg Ducharme. Greg, are you feeling tropical this week? How are you feeling?
I'm in a difficult spot right now. So here's the thing. Outside of the game of golf, and I'm very grateful for the game this week, especially. I'm especially grateful we get to do this episode tonight because I play in one fantasy football league. No money. It's my wife is in the league, and so are all of her friends. And I'm playing her this week.
This is trouble and already.
It's coming down to tonight, and I'm winning by 10 points. And I have Cooper Kupp. She has Robert Woods. But the kicker is she had Cooper Kupp a week ago. And we made a little trade. And I gave her DJ Chark, who put up 3 points this week. It was actually 2 weeks ago. So I've had Kupp for 2 weeks, which softens it a little bit. But so she was really Ram heavy. She had the tight end. She had Kupp. She had Woods. And so I said, I'll help you out. I gave her Chark. Unfair trade, fair trade. I don't know. It seemed fair to me. But
why don't you tell us?
The other thing is, she's 5-1.
There it is. That's what I wanted to hear. I wanted to hear her record.
She's 5-1, complaining to me that she's all Ram heavy. And I'm sitting here at 3-3. And so now it's looking like I'm going to win tonight, but that's never a good thing. I mean, I'm kind of rooting for a tie.
Robert Woods
but at the same time,
off.
I need this win.
He could snap off, catch 2 touchdowns. Cooper Kupp could have like 4 catches for 34 yards, and that'd be the end of it.
Yeah, no, it could happen. It could happen in an instant. So it's a challenge. I don't know what to do. I don't know how to root for this one. So I turn my attention to the Bermuda Championship.
If you'd like to see the distress on Greg's face going through this, you can watch us on YouTube, youtube.com/firstcutpodcast. Also, what we do, any strategy questions, any concerns, anything you want us to talk about, drop it in a 5-star rating and review on iTunes. We'll answer it. Win-win for everybody. This week, we are in Bermuda. We are on the island, Port Royal Golf Course. Greg, I emptied the chamber on all my fun facts about Port Royal before we got on air, so let me run through a couple of these.
Please do.
6,800 yards, which is the longest course on the island of Bermuda. It is also the second shortest on the PGA Tour. So by island standards, pretty long. By PGA Tour standards, very, very short. Also, with 9 golf courses in like 1 square mile, Bermuda is like the most heavily, densely populated golf course country in the world. What do you think about that?
It's a beautiful island. The golf course is beautiful, and there's a lot of really good courses there. My boss loves Bermuda. In fact, he calls it his island. And so he's a big fan. He loves the golf courses there, loves the people. The environment is supposed to be fantastic. So I think it's a great spot. It's very wind dependent. It's going to have a lot of dependency on wind. So if that golf course being the length that it is, it's really fun. If it gets really windy out there, it's fun because you hit some, it becomes manageable. Yet at the same time, the wind always presents that challenge. So it'll be interesting to see how these guys handle it. I think we only have one tournament to go off of, which is last year. I have last year's leaderboard up if you want to hear a couple names, kind of give you a little flavor of the golf course.
Yeah, Brendan Todd won it. I know that.
Brendan Todd.
Wait, let me try to guess. He stormed Harry Higgs on Sunday. I remember that. Yeah. That's all I got.
Okay. Well, good memory. So Brendan Todd shot 62 on Sunday.
Yeah.
He beat Harry Higgs by 4. Harry Higgs shot 68 on Sunday. So then you had Brian Gay, Hank Lebioda, Scottie Scheffler and Aaron Wise. Those were the other two players in tied third. So you have Brendan Todd, not an overly long hitter. Harry Higgs is not necessarily a bomber by any means. Brian Gay is a notably short hitter. Hank Lebioda is not a long hitter either. Then you have Scottie Scheffler and Aaron Wise, who do move it a good ways. But then even after that, Fabian Gomez, Ryan Armour, David Hearn, Wes Roach, these guys are not necessarily the longest of hitters. So you got Denny McCarthy down here at T15, Alex Noren T15. So not necessarily a course where distance is a prerequisite.
Certainly not. Jacob dropped in the chat that this is where Bermuda grass, the name, comes from, which I have no idea if he's trolling me or not. Sometimes he trolls in the chat and sometimes he provides really great facts and insight, and I have no idea which one it is at the moment, but this is Bermuda grass greens. That's what they've got here. So we've seen these before, and you mentioned it, Greg. The only champion is Brendan Todd. He's also the only guy who was in the field last week who is playing this week. That's it. We didn't see any of these other golfers play, I don't think, in either of the last 2 weeks at the Zozo or the CJ Cup. And this has been elevated to full FedEx Cup point status, meaning if you win, you get yourself into the 2021 Masters.
Very similar to Corrales Punta Cana Resort and Club Championship, right? You had, and by the way, Jacob was not trolling you.
Okay.
I believe it was introduced from the island. He's got a link, as he always does.
According to someone on the internet, it's from the island of Bermuda. So, you know, if someone says it on the internet, it's true.
That's right.
there you go. So again, Todd to me is the standout player of the field, which not just because he won last week. I mean, he's a very, very good player. So he's amongst, I would say, the top two or three talents in the field. And I'm interested to see how he handles it. I'm going to have a chance to talk with him tomorrow morning. On a new breed of golf on Sirius, I'm going to interview him. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what he thinks is the key to the course from his perspective. So I'm definitely looking forward to that. And looking forward to seeing how this plays out.
Let's jump into the 10K range. You mentioned it, led by Brendan Todd at 11,100. Greg, I'm interested. I want you to ask him about the shape of his game, how he feels it's going right now, because he's got a couple of kind of meddling finishes in the two no-cut events, a 47th at the Zozo, a 52nd at the CJ Cup. This would be a great course fit for him, considering how short it is and obviously the success that he's had in only the 1 year. But the rest of the 10K range gets rounded out by Will Zalatoris back in the field, and for now, the second time, a guy with no status is the betting favorite to win this golf tournament. Will Zalatoris, the favorite. Harold Varner, the third, at 10,007. Doc Redman, 10,004. And Emiliano Grillo at 10,001. We can elaborate on Todd a little bit, but I think we both feel the same way about Willie Z.
Will Zalatoris is, I mean, three of the four events he's played on tour have been top tens. So yeah. It's been quite impressive. And so I think he does deserve his spot where he is here. So I'm interested in him. I think he is a great play. If you're concerned with Brendan Todd's recent play, then I think Will is a really nice fade. And also, if you're like me, I very rarely bet the defending champion. I very rarely play the defending champion or the player who won the most recent week yet. Last year, Brendan Todd won back-to-back tournaments, nearly three in a row, that hardly ever happens. So does that mean that he's going to defend this week? He's breaking all the trends. I don't know. I have a feeling about Todd. I think the past couple weeks have been strong fields, strong golf courses that are not nearly the fit that this week is. And I'm interested to see. I think it's going to be a good week for Todd, because in this group, this 10K group is full of ball strikers. Will Zalatoris is 10th on tour this year, strokes gained tee to green, and he doesn't even have status. He's a great ball striker. Harold Varner III has remarkable tee to green numbers. Kyle has alluded to this many, many times, and he is an elite ball striker, struggles with the putting. Doc Redman, as you've said, Rick, many times, is a great ball striker, right? He's also friend of the pod. Emiliano Grillo, great ball striker. So these are, you kind of have this group beneath Todd that's, and it'd be maybe a little bit of disrespect to say it's team no putt, but you're pretty close to it. You have some at least fringe members here. So in this group, Brendan Todd to me stands out. I kind of have a feeling this is going to be a putting contest, and the ball striking is not going to be quite as important as it is on a longer, more difficult golf course.
I understand Todd, of course. I think he's very clearly, well, I don't want to say he's very clearly the best player in this field, but I get it. I think he's well deserving of an $11,100 price tag. I'm a little bit more concerned than you are. We've covered Will Zalatoris ad nauseum. You know, 16 of his last 18 starts anywhere on any tour have been top 20s. I mean, he just finds a way to get to the top of the leaderboard no matter where he's at. Yeah, you mentioned it, Doc Redmond. So I went back and I ran the numbers since the tour's restart. If anybody who has more than like 22 rounds played, I think Doc has 40 of them in that stretch. He leads this field in strokes gained approach. And Mark, when he was following him at, I want to say Wyndham, referenced what like a heavy ball he has, which if the winds start to kick up, that's the only defense you get. That's the only defense that you get here at Port Royal. If those winds kick up, I want somebody who's got a heavy ball, a little bit of a more piercing ball flight. I think Doc's ready. I'm a little bit biased. I like the guy, but I think he's ready.
He's a great choice. I just wonder if that's the kind of fit. When you look at this tournament, is that why you think a ball striker may have a really good time here because of the wind? Are you banking on wind picking up? But we've only had one go around at this tournament, no shot link data to go off of. What do you anticipate being the key to this course?
So, ball striking plays everywhere. I actually just ran this stat this morning for a different column. I went back and looked at the best ball striker. So this is approach plus off the tee since the start of the calendar year 2020. So I took the top 10 guys. They have 13 of the 32 wins this calendar year. 40% of the wins have come from those 10 guys. So ball striking plays everywhere. So yes, that's part one. And then part two is, you know, there's different flights, right? There's different ball flights. There's different ways to get it done. Not all of them are, you can read in the stats. You have to kind of see it once or twice. You know, it's why Stenson probably played well at Punta Cana, right? When that wind starts to kick, he's got that piercing ball flight. So I think it's a two-part thing for me, Greg, but I just love ball strikers anywhere in the world, any course, no matter what.
They definitely seem to be a little more reliable, right? Yeah. It's hard to choose. It's one thing to say a guy's going to heat up with the putter this week. He's going to really get it going with the putter. It's another thing to say he's going to find something with his swing and have a great week tee to green. I'm just not sure the margin this week is great enough to say it really favors the ball strikers, where the difference between a quality shot, a well-struck shot, and a mediocre shot or a slight miss, what's the margin there? Is it going to reward the ball striker enough, or is it going to penalize the guy that's slightly off enough to make the difference?
I see what you're
ultimately
saying.
This week, I think you're going to have to make birdies. And so where are the birdies going to come from is really the question. I'm thinking this has a slight lean towards putting, but I'm basically basing this off of just a one leaderboard from last year.
Yeah, I get it, right? I mean, some of these courses where you've got specific landing areas and you have to keep it on the correct shelf and things like that, they expose the poor ball striker a bit more, right? They expose the guys that can't control their distance, that can't land it where they want to within a yard or two. This might just be, the difference might be the good approach players hit it to 14 feet, the bad ones hit it to 20, and we have a putting contest.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I'm anticipating. I think the leaderboard from last year reflects that a little bit. But again, weather can change anything. So it is up in the air a little bit, but I don't remember it being particularly narrow off the tee. I remember having some pretty good width, some pretty open areas. Again, it's a golf course designed for windy conditions. And that is, as you said, the defense. So I think the players are going to have their way with it. And I'm favoring slightly really strong putters.
Yeah, I'm kind of having a little epiphany moment here. That makes a lot of sense. Let's jump down to the 9K range. If you want putters, I got a couple here for you. Charlie Hoffman leads the way at $9,700, the greatest putter on the face of the earth. $9,500, Denny McCarthy, Henrik Stenson, $9,300, Cameron Tringale, $9,200, Christopher Ventura, another good putter, $9,100, and then it's rounded out by Peter Malnati. He's had a couple of good finishes recently at a flat $9,000. Here's your putters, Greg. Who do you like?
Ooh, I think you and I are well aligned on this one.
We are.
Denny McCarthy won, is the best putter in the, at, what did you say again? Could you
repeat on the face of the earth, like what, Lou Gehrig? I'm the luckiest man.
Yeah.
On the face of the earth, right?
Yeah, that's Denny McCarthy. So, and as we've said, since before the playoffs, we've seen kind of a, or leading into the playoffs, we've seen a little bit of an increase in his iron play, which I still think is going to bode well. Now, it hasn't been great. It hasn't shown to be, well, Denny McCarthy is all of a sudden a contender. Mm-hmm. It just, I get the sense that it hasn't all come together yet. And I'm going to keep going back to the well with him because, look, it also hasn't been a disaster. It hasn't been a letdown by any means. It's just been kind of a boring type, doesn't quite get you all of the value you're hoping for. So anyway, I think McCarthy is going to pop off at some point. Doug Bell mentioned it at the Sanders that he's going to win one of these days, which Jacob just shared with us again. And so I think that's true. And I'm going to kind of keep going back to the well in an event like this with a price point like this. I think he's one of the better players in this price point. So I like Denny McCarthy. And the other player, Rick, who I'm sure that we agree on, is Ventura. You've been high on for a long time. He's another great putter. I think he was 14th strokes gained putting so far this year. So I'm pretty high on him this week as well.
Yep. I think you nailed McCarthy. It's great. He's popped at Wyndham. He popped at Sanderson Farms. He finished 15th here last year. Everything else you mentioned, absolutely, I agree with. You know, Ventura is interesting. There are probably, I want to argue, like five or six guys in this field that we are seeing their game mature very quickly. And we mentioned that about Matthew Wolf over the last 3 months. I mean, Matthew Wolf is at warp speed. Right. We've talked about that a lot, but I also think there are guys like a Christopher Ventura, like a Justin Suh, we can talk about later, like a Doug Gim, who they're just a little bit slower to mature, but the signs are there. And what you're seeing from Ventura right now is, yeah, two top seven finishes in his last four starts, doing it in the right way, where he's gaining a bunch of strokes off the tee. He has a great putter, which if you get hot at an event like this, you can really go low. So I just think he's one of these guys, and you know, I think this is a good fit for him, but I think you're just going to see over time, the frequency of his top 10s, the frequency of his top 20s is going to increase. The frequency of his missed cuts is going to decrease. You're seeing the polish happen, right? And they're all very young, but I think he's one of the handful of guys that's really starting to turn the corner.
I tend to agree. And I also go back to this. The players that have ascended at warp speed, Rick, like Matthew Wolf, as you mentioned, like a Victor Hovland, Colin Morikawa, those guys, and players before them, like the Justin Thomas, the Jordan Spieths, the Bryson DeChambeaus, those guys before them who have had quick, and John Rahm, quick early success on the PGA Tour out of college, they paved the way for other players like this. And they say, hey, well, he can do it. I competed with him in college. We both went to Oklahoma State. Why not me? I can do it too. And just a little bit of belief sometimes is the difference between struggling to keep your card and winning on the PGA Tour. The line, and this is something I'm going to talk to Brandon Todd about tomorrow. He's a player who's seen the doldrums, right? He's seen the struggle and it's been as bad as it could possibly be. Well, what's the difference between that and a guy who nearly wins three times in a row? And I think what he's going to say is that it's a very fine line. It's a couple of breaks here and there. It's just a couple of shots per tournament that make a huge difference. And so if you're a Ventura, sometimes just a little bit of belief, just a confidence, even if it comes from a peer of yours, somebody who you view as a peer who accomplishes something great. Sometimes that can be the very fine line. It can get you across that line.
Yeah, it really, and now in, you know, 2020, more than ever, the lines are so blurred. The margins are as razor thin as they've ever been. It is fascinating stuff. I'm interested in hearing what he has to say about that. Rest of this 9K range, you know, I think Charlie Hoffman, he is what he is, right? I think that what we've seen over the course of the past couple of months is, you know, he's going to kind of offset his missed cuts with a couple of top 15s. I don't think that there is a natural fit for him. I think that, you know, some weeks he's going to play well, he's going to get you a top 15 and that's it. He's not going to be a safe and consistent option. And then Stenson, you know, I kind of mentioned it, the ball flight that he potentially has is interesting, but I mean, does it worry you that he's missed three of his last four cuts? Like, it kind of worries me.
Yeah, absolutely. And so you got to consider these events. What are the events? Do you have it in front of you, the events he played in? I know it's not Sherwood or Zozo. So what does he miss the cut in?
So he missed the cut at the PGA Championship, the U.S. Open, which fine. He finished 21st at Punta Cana, and then he missed the cut at Sanderson Farms.
Okay, so Sanderson's the one I'm thinking of. And Punta Cana is another one. But although Punta Cana played a little tougher than we kind of expected, it wasn't necessarily one of those events like the Shriners, where you had to go crazy low in order to just make the cut. You had to get to 7 under to make the cut. So I worry about Stenson in birdie fest, even though he's put on in an Open Championship, one of the greatest Sundays we've ever seen. Yeah. But in general, I mean, that's one of those venues, that's one of those tournaments where the line between great ball striking and struggling with the ball striking is so fine. So he has that advantage, where here, it's going to come down to the putter, and I don't trust his putter enough to play him in a lot of my lineups. So I am with you, and I think Hoffman's the same way. If it gets really windy and the weather gets crazy and a European Tour event breaks out, then you may have a chance with those two players, but I'm not banking on bad weather that's so bad that makes a course that's built for a lot of wind. You know, it's like you're going to get a little bit of wind. It's going to be okay, but if you get crazy winds, now all of a sudden the margins get finer and it gives a player like that an advantage, but that's a lot to expect. So for me, I'm passing on those guys with you.
Speaking of European Tour, I have a guy in the 8K range that I would like to talk about, but first we're going to take a quick break and hear a word from our partners.
Did you know more than 75% of Americans will experience foot pain in their lifetime, but only 10% will seek out a solution for that pain? Spoiler alert, your feet don't have to hurt, and I know foot biomechanics can be complex, but solving foot pain should be simple. It's a signature orthotic shape of the super feet insoles that give you the comfort and support where you need it the most. It redistributes and reduces stress and strain on your entire body. Think about those long walks on a golf course and how uncomfortable your feet can get. Well, they don't have to, and super feet has helped millions of people worldwide experience the life-changing magic of comfy, pain-free feet. When your feet feel good, so do you. It is one of the most important parts of your overall health and well-being. And for a limited time, Superfeet is having its biggest sale of the year. Go to superfeet.com to save 25% off site-wide and get free shipping. Hurry, sale pricing ends June 5th. It's a really fine line creating workout clothes that are great in the gym and workout clothes that are also great to look at outside the gym. And Vuori has threaded that needle. They are designed to work out in, but they don't look like it. They don't feel like it. And it's incredibly comfortable stuff, whether you are running, training, swimming, doing yoga, running errands, lounging around the house. It really doesn't matter. These are versatile clothes. You'll find me often in the men's Sunday performance jogger because I like the jogger situation that goes on down at the bottom, but they're very comfortable. They've got a little bit of a shorter inseam, so they're not as bulky as other pants or other joggers that I have seen out there, and I've really enjoyed how they work both in and out of the gym. So now, here's what you can do for our listeners. First-time purchasers are getting 20% off. All you have to do is go to Vuori.com/first. That's Vuori.com/first. Again, not only will you receive 20% off your first order, but enjoy free shipping on any U.S. orders over $75. And here's my favorite part, free returns. Yeah, go check it out. Vuori.com/first and discover the versatility of Vuori clothing.
And we're back. $8,000, Greg. Henrik Norlander at 8,900, all the way down to Pat Perez at 8,000. I have two names. I have three names that I'm most interested in. I just added one. Three names that I'm interested in this range, but I would like to see who moves the needle for you. Who is someone, because I actually find this to be the most difficult and maybe the most awkward, if that makes sense, range.
It's a very uncomfortable range.
Yeah.
So the guy that sticks out to me sits on top of this range in Henrik Norlander.
Okay.
And I'm not sure what to do with him. for a number of ways. So I look at Norlander and I think, okay, he's becoming a popper, as I say, right? He's had some really nice finishes, some really, really solid, high quality events. Yet there's also a fairly large miscut risk. And he's not, in a strokes game perspective, he's not the putter that I really am looking for. So for me this week, when I'm looking at poppers, and Norlander, I think, has a pretty good chance of performing well, but it's a little bit risky for me in the wrong way. It's not the right kind of risk for me. So I go and I look at a guy like Maverick McNealy, who is just about as risky as you can get on the PGA Tour. He's another popper, yet he does it typically with great putting. And when he putts well, he tends to perform well. And I also think this is a golf course he's going to be fairly comfortable with. So he finished last year. I think he had a pretty good finish last year. It was Norlander. So Norlander was tied 28th last year.
McNealy finished 35th.
35th. Okay, there you go. So not terrible. Could definitely get it going this year. So I tend to lean towards a McNealy in favor of a Norlander, just because I like the fingerprint a little bit more this week.
This is where you and I think there's not a right or a wrong. You and I differ the most. You like these kind of putters who can pop. And I mean, McNealy gained 11 strokes putting at the Sanderson Farms. He gained 9 at the Northern Trust. Like, he's capable of going super, super hot. But I look at the fact that he's lost strokes on approach in 9 straight starts, and it scares the lights out of me. And I'm just like, oh my God, I can't. But like, he still finds a way to, I mean, he's got a top 10 at the Rocket Mortgage. He had that 17th place finish at Sanderson. Like, I get it. It's just like against my beliefs.
Yeah, I know. And look, I'm with you. This is hard. This tournament, these kinds of events are really, really hard to forecast and predict, because you're dealing with players who are not the elite of the elite. So you start looking at statistics and, well, what if, so he's losing strokes in these events to the field. Well, what's that field look like? And so it raises all these questions. And what's the golf course look like? What's the fingerprint of the golf course? We don't have a lot of history here. And so it's very difficult to forecast. So I'm with you. It's not comfortable. It, right. You want to go for a swim, but the water's not really that warm. And it's a little bit windy. It's a little overcast. If the sun was out, I'd jump right in, but it's not quite there, but it's supposed to. And I'm on vacation, so I should be in the pool, but I don't know. So I think the model this week includes a McNealy. But I completely understand your concerns.
Right. The guy that I teased before the break, the European Tour gentleman, child, he's 18 years old. Rasmus Højgaard is in this field. He's $8,800. If you are not familiar with Rasmus, fair. Very fair for you not to be. He is very young. This is crazy, Greg. He's born in 2001. That blows my mind when I see that stuff, right? He's going to turn 19 in December. It's crazy how young he is.
I don't know about you, but when I was growing up playing ice hockey, birth year is how you're
right.
It's not your grade, right? Oh, I was a 91. So you're talking about older. Oh yeah. He's a 93 up and comer. Really. He's really good. 93s were babies.
Right. Now 01.
Now you're talking about an 01. What? And he's on the PGA. He's playing a PGA Tour event this year.
Yeah,
this week he's playing on the. We're talking about him. So this is. I'm at that strange age. You probably are too, where these guys that you're looking up to are starting to be younger than you. So it's fascinating.
It hit me really hard when Kevin Durant made his. Kevin Durant was like the first like star stud that I was older than, and I was like, oh my God, he's in the NBA, and like this is crazy. So that Kevin Durant was like the guy for me who like changed my life.
It was Jordan Spieth for me.
Yeah.
Kid that's just such a star.
Rasmus, so he had a 4-event stretch on the European Tour where he went 2nd, 6th, 3rd and capped it off with a win. There are not like, say what you want about the European Tour. Those guys can play. We've talked about how razor thin the margins are all across the globe at this point in the world of golf. Now he's cooled off a little bit since, but he's going to be volatile. He's not even 19 yet. He comes over, he plays an event that the field will be much more similar to some of those European Tour events that he has played. He's number one, I think, is interesting.
I have another European player for you.
Hit me with it.
Now, you're much more familiar with him. I'm not sure if you're going to like the reason why, but I just mentioned Jordan Spieth. So I'll mention a player in Jordan's nightmares. I think Danny Willett.
Oh, boy.
And I just have a funny feeling with Danny Willett. Now, again, this goes back to the struggles that we face in an event like this, where you're likely going to have holes in the game. You're likely going to have things that are really concerning for you when you look at a player's statistics. So last year in 2020, he's 105th off the tee. He's 156th approach the green. I don't like those things very much. It's hard for me to say, oh, yeah, Danny's going to have a great week. He was 54th in putting. So the putting is a strength, which I know how you feel about this. And I know how I feel about this. So I like that. The putting is a strength. He can get it going. He had a T4 at the Rocket Mortgage, and it hasn't been great since, but he's only played in the U.S. Open. I just have a funny feeling about Danny Willett this week, where he is better than the players in this range. I mean, he's a major champion. He's a Masters champion. He's he's got to feel like he's a great player. So a part of me is saying, well, I'm looking for Danny Willett to step up this week and perform. And there's definitely some question marks, but I'm kind of feeling a Danny Willett week.
The Butler Cabin photo of Spieth putting the jacket on Danny Willett is just an all-timer. It's crazy.
Oh, man. It's so hard. That's a hard one to look at for me. And all of us. I mean, we're all Jordan Spieth fans.
Yeah, of course. The game's better when Spieth is good. That's non-negotiable. Two guys quickly here in this 8K range. So I mentioned Justin Suh earlier. I mean, he's coming off a fourth place at Punta Cana. He's coming off an eighth at the Shriner. Those are his last two starts. Now, we didn't have shot link data for Punta Cana, so it's hard to see, you know, quote unquote, how he did it, but absolutely flushed it at Shriners. He gained like six strokes on approach. It was by far the best approach week of his very, very young career. So you could argue it's an outlier, or you could argue he found something. I wish I had the Punta Cana data to kind of back it up. But another one of these guys, I think, just a little bit slower. I mean, when you come out and you are put on the same stage at a press conference with Morikawa, Wolf, and Hovland, I mean, like, good luck. Good luck living up to it. Those three guys are unbelievable. Justin Suh, just a little bit behind. He's going to be fine.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a great point, Rick. I'm looking forward to seeing what he can do. But it's just you probably, if you're feeling like you're looking up a mountain at them. But yes, you go back to what we talked about with Christopher Ventura, and yeah, he can do that. He can play with these guys. He's played with them before. So how do you take that? It's kind of a fine line. Either it can damage your confidence, or it can ascend you to great. You know, you can use it to build your confidence. So I'll be interested to see. I like the pick.
The only other guy in the 8K range, and as long as this streak goes on, I have to talk about him, is Adam Schenck at 8,100. He is now on a 10 event consecutive cut streak. It is the fifth longest on the PGA Tour. It's the longest in this field. I don't expect you to know this. Would you like to take a crack at the guys who have longer cut streaks than Adam Schenck?
No, I don't want to take
it. Okay, here it is. Rory, Xander, Hovland, Rahm. That's it.
Wow.
Pretty exclusive stuff. So yeah. the only unfortunate thing is, you know, it's really great when you plug and play Adam Schenck at 6,800 and he makes the cut. At 81, you kind of need like a T25-ish type of deal, not just make the cut anymore. Yeah.
More than a made cut.
That's the only concern. 7K. This is where things start to get really interesting. So Patrick Rogers, Stuart Sink at 7,900 goes all the way down to Cam Percy, Ben Martin, Rob Oppenheim, Greg. Find me somebody. Find me a couple of guys. Yeah,
I like this range more than the 8K range.
I think I do too.
The 8K range just, I mean, I mentioned the pool reference before. It feels like you're jumping in a river in the middle of winter. So I don't necessarily like that 8K range. But in this range, there's a lot to hang your hat on for me. I mean, look at Stuart Sink. Don't look past Stuart Sink. Now, he has a win this year. Check. He has a tied 12th at the Sanderson Farms. Check. Now, a tied 64th at Shriners with an 81 in the final round. He shot 67, 63, 70, and then 81. I look at that round from a player whose highest round, aside from that, was 72 this year in the third round of the Sanderson Farms. He has Three rounds of 65 and a 63 this year. I mean, this is great play. And all of a sudden an 81 shows up. I write that off. That's a one-off. That is not a problem. That's a one-time thing. And he's going to go show these boys how to play this week. And I really, I'm looking at Stuart Sink, a guy who's having a pretty good putting year. He sits at 50th right now so far this year. I know it's a small sample size, but he's 50th in strokes game putting. He's hitting the ball really, really well. He's been driving the ball fantastic. And I'm not saying that that's going to be a key factor this week, but in a way, it always is. You got a guy's driving the ball well, he's going to have some confidence. And I think that's going to, I think that 81 is shaken off. I'm throwing it out. I think that is a huge factor to why he's priced the way he is. And I will go to say, I think Stuart Sink is the value in this field. I think he's the best value of the field. So play Stuart Sink.
Okay. I like that. I like that. But I got the guy. I got the guy right here. He is, let me confirm his price here because I don't want to get this wrong.
Okay.
He is $7,800 and it is Wesley Bryan.
And I like him too.
So I don't know even where to start. So I think if there was ever a time and place to deploy Wesley Bryan, it is now and here. So let's be clear. Wesley Bryan, very short hitter, like ranks 205th on the PGA Tour in driving distance. And there's probably only 210 qualified guys. Like he's bottom barrel. However, Greg, this is what I find very interesting. It is the smallest of positives, but he has gained strokes off the tee in four consecutive events. And I know what you're thinking. You're going, who cares? Four events where he's like basically positive. Who cares? Well, I'll tell you why. Because he lost strokes off the tee in his 17 straight starts before that. 17 in a row he loses, four in a row he gains. Did he find, like, that has to be, he fixed something. He's not good. He's just like barely above average, but to go 17 in a row losing and then gain four in a row, come on. That's gotta be something.
Yeah, of course it is. When you are at the starting point, now look, distance is a skill. It's something that can be worked on, but it's not a skill that you're going to have that you can just try a little bit harder and improve your distance in a day. Right, that's something that takes a little bit of time to gain, to build. For some people, it's a lifetime. So when you go to the first tee, you have your club head speed, you have your distance. There's very little factors at the PGA Tour level that are going to affect your distance day to day to day. So when you sit with the club head speed, the distance of Wesley Bryan, you're not going to gain strokes off the tee. You're not going to do it. It's very, very challenging to do. Look at strokes gained off the tee, compare it to distance, and then compare it to accuracy. There are a couple of outliers of players who will be short hitters under 300 yards and regularly gain off the tee. It's very few. So for Wesley Bryan to gain off the tee, it probably means he's hitting a pile of fairways.
Correct.
And that means, again, not that that's going to be critical of importance this week, but it means that he's swinging well. It's just a sign that he's swinging well. And he's another one of those poppers. So I like it. I don't think it gives you the value of Stuart Sink, who's won this year, right? Who's a major champion, who's much more experienced. But I really like the play.
You don't think that resume compares to trick shot artist Wesley Bryan? Three wins on the Korn Ferry Tour?
He's talented.
But you're right. You're right. And what he pops at is putting. So his iron game is usually pretty good. He pops with the putter. That's the thing that is the difference between like an eighth place finish and a 38th place finish for him is usually the rolling the rock. Is there anybody else here? I mean, I could be a real glutton for punishment and be convinced that Patrick Rogers, who's missed two cuts in a row, has had his two worst putting performances basically, I don't want to say ever, but in like the last year or two, that he's had a couple of weeks off and he's found the stroke and he's right back at it. I think you got to be a little bit of a glutton for punishment for that, Greg, because he was very popular the 2 weeks that he missed the cut.
Yeah. And we talked about him a lot because he's a long hitter, good putter, right?
Yeah. So
that combination is, it tends to be rare. So I do think there's value there, but again, he happens to sit at the top of this, at the top of the 7K range. And so I'm not sure that he's going to take the place of a Stuart Sink for me. I don't think he's going to take the place of a Wes Bryan for me.
What about the bottom of the 7K range? Is there, Max Homa, has been, Max Homa has been bad, unfortunately. I mean, Doug Gim, I mentioned, I think he's another one of those guys that you're starting to see a bit more signs out of. You've got Jason Duffner, Kyle Stanley. You're always a sucker for Kyle Stanley, aren't you?
Yeah.
Not this week.
So Kyle Stanley is another one of those guys who, when he's playing really well, and I love him, so I appreciate it. I always say if I interviewed Kyle Stanley, I wouldn't be able to talk.
Kyle Stanley of all people. This makes the least sense. Yeah.
So he's a guy that's going to excel at a place like the Farmers Insurance Open, where there's a real benefit.
And yeah.
Maybe in today's game, there's zero places where that's going to happen. But he's a guy that is going to benefit when the margins for hitting greens and hitting fairways is really high, because that's what he does, fairways and greens. And I just haven't seen anything that makes me really think Kyle Stanley's going to have a great week. So a couple other guys I have big question marks with, but I've seen some firepower. We get down to this range in a tournament like this, I'm okay with getting a little bit risky. So Wyndham Clark is a guy that he rings off the page to me, because everybody has big question marks, but Wyndham Clark can roll the ball. He can roll it with his putter. I'm sure you have some better statistics than I, but I think that Wyndham Clark is a guy who can pop off, and you feel a little bit like you're throwing a dart with your eyes closed, and I do too, but there's a likelihood that it could hit. And if it could, he could win. Then the other guy is Tyler McCumber, who we've seen great play from this year. He's sitting at 7,300. If we think this is going to be a kind of a playback of Punta Cana, well, why wouldn't you go with Tyler McCumber? So I think those two guys at the low end of the 7Ks, below the middle 7K, I think those are the two guys that I would take a chance on.
Yeah, McCumber showed it. I mean, the couple of, I think it was like back-to-back top 10s, Punta Cana and then probably Sanderson. Like these type of events are Tyler McCumber type events, right?
I mean,
They step on the tee box on Thursday morning. They look around at their peers and they say, I can beat these guys. And you know, I know every golfer probably, there are a lot of golfers, there's probably 1,000 of them that think they are the best golfer in the world every single time they tee it up. And that's the benefit of being a confident guy and that's good for the game. But I think that there's some weeks where some guys get on the tee box and they're like, oh boy, like everybody's here, I'm in trouble, let's find a weekend.
Yeah, I'm a little over my head, right? What are the goals going into the week? And it's realistic for Tyler McCumber to think, well, I can win this week, right? I can compete with these players. I've done it this year recently. I'm playing well. I know I can go make enough birdies. I know I can keep up. Whereas you go play on a big boy golf course with Dustin Johnson and John Rahm and many of the players we've seen the last 2 weeks, and you get a little defensive, right? It's like, you've been in those situations where you get to, you're in one group of people and you feel very confident and you feel like you're the star, maybe in a pickup basketball game. And then the big boys come in and all of a sudden you shrink and your skills diminish just because of who's standing next to you on the tee box. I think I'm with you, Rick, feels like I'm a cumber week.
6K range. Mama, this is tough. There are, I understand that there's probably 40 guys, sub 7K, and half of them are probably going to make the cut, or 15 of them are going to make the cut or something like that. So I understand that there is value down here. I'm having a lot of time parsing out a couple of these guys. I've circled one name. I have one that I feel a lot better than a lot of these other guys, and it's Michael Gligic at 6,500.
Okay, tell me more.
So I'm going to say this as a compliment. Michael Gligic is a very average tour pro. Now, that's a compliment when he is priced in the bottom, third or bottom quarter of this field?
6,500.
Right. I mean, he's getting close to the near the min price. I mean, that's a compliment. So he should probably be priced around 7,700, something like that. So he's the guy that I think stands out. He missed a cut at a very popular missed cut at Punta Cana. But other than that, he's made 5 of his last 6. He's coming off a T27 at the Shriners. He can putt it well. He's almost very average in every single category. But I think in this situation, when you look at his price tag, that is actually a big compliment to him.
So I like it. I can go with it. I think you have a great price tag there. So I got another guy for you in a similar price range. We've really only seen one good performance, but we've seen some good rounds so far this year. And there's a little bit of a root in this one, and it's Camilo Vajegas. Right? Rooting for him a little bit.
Yeah.
Of course. We saw a tie 23rd at the Sanderson Farms, shot a couple of 69s, and then a 66 on Sunday, which was great. And he answered that with 66 in the first round at the Shriners. Now, that was a difficult cut to make, especially if you shot 72 in one of the two rounds. Mm-hmm. But maybe there's a chance that Camilo could get something going. Now, he goes against the grain for me. So far this year, he's 254th in strokes gained putting. So it's way against the grain. But he's 13th tee to green. Yeah. He's 19th approach the green. So there's that capability of making some birdies. And maybe that bodes well for him. So I would definitely give him a look, although it's not where I feel the most confident. But that's kind of going down into the depths. A couple other players where I think there's something you can hang your hat on. Ryan Armour had a really nice finish last year at this event, which was a tie eight finish.
Another one of those guys who's like, I don't know what his driving distance rank is, but I guess it 165. You know what I mean? Another guy who the handful of courses every year that you get on that don't require a lot of distance, he seems to play well.
So Ryan Armour, I think there's a possibility here. Now, I'm going off of basically two things. One, which we said far too much today, it feels like a Ryan Armour kind of a week. I don't like going off of just a feel. You need a little more than that, right? I like to have a feeling about a player, look into it, and then find that I was right. You know what I mean? Oh yeah, I told you. Oh yeah, he has been played well. Well, Ryan Armour feels right this week, yet he just keeps shooting 71 and 72, which gives me a little bit of pause, yet he is comfortable with the course. So if there's a pop-off kind of a week coming for a Ryan Armour, then I think this could be it. And again, it's purely a feel. So I don't love that, but I think if there's going to be a Ryan Armour type week, he's got a beautiful golf swing. I mean, we've seen it really is quite good, and he can control his golf ball. There's no question about it. He's at a disadvantage with distance. Like you were saying, Rick, it's a big time disadvantage. And I guess it was Wyndham Championship when we saw him play really well last. And earlier at the Travelers and at the Rocket Mortgage, he had some really good weeks, T6, T4 respectively. So maybe I'm hoping for a little bit of that, another bounce back like that. So I guess I may throw a blind dart at Ryan Armour.
I actually gave him too much credit. I said he was probably 165th in driving distance. He was 182nd last year. So I actually gave him like two more yards.
Yeah. So he's going to go here, if nothing else, and feel like he is not at that massive disadvantage.
Yeah.
Like, oh, these guys are so – I'm 60 behind these guys. He's not going to feel like that. He's going to feel like, okay, I can – here we're at a course I can play.
I actually think the other guy who, again, I'm scraping. This is the bottom of the barrel. You know, Stuart Sink has won this year. Hudson Swafford has won this year. He won the last time we were on, like, basically in the same situation, like an island, windy, tropical situation. He won at Punta Cana, $6,800 bucks.
Hey, hang your hat on it, right? It's something. It's better. You know that there's been good play recently. So, hey, I like it. Sign me up. I like it more than Ryan Armour. A little more expensive, but
yeah, a little bit.
There's something there.
I'm basically tapped on this 6,000 range. It's pretty sour. Anybody else?
Me too. No, nobody else. I mean, look, part of it is, can you find one thing that you like, that you think there's one thing that makes you feel good down in this range? Okay. Hudson Swafford won. Ryan Armour, he's going to be confident going into this event. Like, if you have to make it up, but you got to try to find one thing that you feel is going to benefit a player down in this range, because they're used to competing against the upper echelon on tour and they get beat. And so they look like they're not great players. These guys are great players. It's very important to understand. I mean, anybody who has the ability to go out and shoot consecutive rounds of 64, 65, 67, which anybody with a PGA Tour card can do, well, you've got to, that guy's going to have a chance. So anybody has a chance, and just because they don't have great statistics doesn't mean they're bad iron players or bad putters. It's just, they've been struggling a little bit. And these are the kind of weeks where players can turn it around. So find something that you like to hang your hat on and go for it. Take a risk.
Take a risk. I think this thing is wide open, and there are a lot of good storylines with young guys trying to make a name for themselves, trying to lock up that tour card. We've got Willie Z at the top. This is going to be fun. We're going to be back on Tuesday with our mega preview pod as always. But for now, Greg, thank you very much for coming on. Looking forward to hearing about what Brendan Todd has to say.
Yeah, I'm excited to share that tomorrow as well. Look, a megapod. What's better than a megapod? So I'm looking forward to super megapod. Catching up with you again tomorrow.
Maybe a super megapod or a mega megapod would be better.
Okay, yeah, I think those two things are both better. But look, you're talking about it's a third place finish here with megapod, so that's pretty good.
That is pretty good. Take T3 every single week. You can find Greg on Twitter at TheRealGFD. You can find me on Twitter at RickRunGood. This has been The First Cut, and we'll catch you next time.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.